The Path to Sleep, Lincoln Stoller, 2017. This work is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. Chapter 3, Somnolence. The Desire for Sleep. Somnolence is a state of strong desire for sleep. Some have trouble going to sleep because sleep doesn't move their lives forward. Their ambivalence is nurtured by linear thinking, thoughts such as every action can be judged by the value of its result. To view sleep as nothing more than a respite or a tonic is a sad misconception that overlooks sleep's deeper revitalizing processes. The serious problems in your life, the ones fueling your insomnia, cannot be solved by linear thinking. Your waking obsession with these problems is where you're wasting your time. In sleep, you have the opportunity to tap into and to understand the soil in which these problems are rooted. In sleep, you can understand the maze of the world you've built, not as it appears, but as it is. You can come to understand the layers of intention that you've built into those layers, to which you've chosen to pay attention. This maze is a place to find solutions, and it's easier to navigate when you're in trance. Sleep is not the only path to self-understanding, but it is the path your mind offers you. It's more deeply integrating than any treatment you can buy if you can just learn to engage it. Healing involves change, learning, and creativity. We are all creative, but we live in a culture lacking creativity. The more interrelated we are, the more connections are disturbed by our change, or even the discussion of it. Easy for me to go off as a soloist into seclusion or to climb mountains, but not so easy with an investment in business, house, or family. Our culture accords creative license to people and ideas working for profit. Others are encouraged to ply a trade. Creativity is not taught nor subsidized, and no one seriously tries. If you doubt this, see what they're teaching first graders in public school, or any other grade for that matter. The result is a culture that doesn't know how to heal itself as a collective or ourselves as individuals. From our culture, we learn how to approach our problems. As history demonstrates, our idea of how to solve our major problems is incremental. To repeat past failures, trying variations on what didn't work before. This is a process that's creative in the details, but not in the whole. Those who propose extensively creative solutions are called dreamers. Culture exists to maintain and sustain itself, not you. Culture does not teach a model for personal healing or evolution. Questioning political, social, financial, and legal authority holds risks. In these realms exist rules and norms, and the consequences for maladjustment are punitive, not therapeutic. Your mental health suffers unless you embrace the craziness you're told is the path to understanding a world, even though it exceeds your understanding. Psychology does not understand our culture's problems or your problems. Mental health practitioners are not scientists, sages, or saints. Their role is that of guidance counselors serving the social good. Being creative helps you break out of culture's role in directing your growth. The guidance you need is inside you. And it builds on the craziness of your day, on your ego's perpetual state of falling apart. You put yourself back together in sleep. I'm not talking about dreaming, though that's part of it. I'm talking about plain old sleep, the deep kind. Your sleep problems are a wake-up call to reconnect with yourself. They're forcing you to deal with the important issues of your life and your many non-functional habits. Celebrate your insomnia. But here's the problem. The door to your reconnection is buried under years of bad habits. Maintained by culture and ego, the path will be a test of your notions of normalcy and the sanity you thought you had. There's nothing to be done for it. You must dig your way out. In the exercise, Imagining Your Way Out, I ask you to build real feeling solutions to the significant problems of your life and believe them. You will object. These solutions are not really real. They're imaginary. That's true, they are. They are not real. But then, neither were the problems. In fact, nothing is really real in itself. Things are only real in relationship. And things change when relationships change. The exercise is not to plaster over your real problems with happy-faced solutions. The objective is simply to remind you that these are your stories, and the traps you're in are the relationships you believe. This exercise is of no use to the logical mind, that part of you that wants to think its way out of the box it's created. That part is ready to buy or bribe its way out. This is doomed to fail. You can never buy off a demon. They have no interest in money or barter. Most of these problems are not even yours. They're other people's, and you're not going to solve them for yourself or resolve them for others. You need to find new space and then grow in it. There's a different part of you that's watching this exercise. It's that crazy part that does not follow the rules. It's not crazy, really, but you might as well see it as such. It's creative, recognizes no authority, and follows an unreasonable logic. The language you use to think with is a tool to predict events in the world. It was not designed and has not yet evolved as a tool to understand yourself. Our use of language comfortably expresses the logical and sequential. But you are not logical or sequential. Steven Pinker says, quote, "Language is exquisitely designed to express who did what to whom, what is true of what, where, when, and why," end quote, from his Language as an Adaptation to the Cognitive Niche. There is a part of you that's emotional, expressive, and not limited to the proper use of language. This is the part of you that you've been taught to keep locked up. It is the part of you that communes with God and the devil and everything in between. It has explosive power and it is to be used wisely. It is this creative part of you that the Imagining Your Way Out exercise tasks with making new things real. It's this part of you that invites your company. And sleep. Rebuilding reality. Many things happen during your four stages of sleep, some physical, others psychological. Your brain does not distinguish the physical from the psychological, so it will help to remove this distinction. In the first two chapters, we explored rhythms and your control of them. Our mind floats on a set of frequencies to which we are so inured we are oblivious. These frequencies create a view of the landscape at every turn. They are the pixels of our attention, and unless you are aware of them, you are not aware of anything. Attention underlies discernment and decision-making. It determines whether you take a new road, hold the course, turn the page, or close the book. When you look to see the choices you have, the only choices you'll see are the ones you resonate with. Frequencies are the tools your mind uses to draw its maps. This is not a given. You build it. You build your maps of what you think is real. Our first stage of sleep is simply to change gears, to begin to flow energy through your body. The deep relaxation of self-hypnotism can bring you into this state, a state from which you're quite aware and easily awakened. Like building a fire, the first stage is the small sticks. In stage two, your verbal brain goes offline and your nonverbal brain starts interacting with your body. Issues of stress, injury, and repair are recognized. You accept and engage your physical reality, the robots of your body, the communication chemicals and defensive cells are sent out to inform and to heal. The deep stages of sleep, 3 and 4, rebuild muscles, tissues, and vitality. Your body's cells, living from a few days to a year, are regenerated from all-purpose T cells, born now in your bone marrow. You can sleep all day, but without deep sleep, you will collapse. I believe all the tissues and organs of our body harbor intelligence and memory, though of kinds we might not recognize. Obviously, some intelligence exists to maintain homeostasis in a chaotic environment, and it's not your intelligence. These organs and tissues communicate through strange mechanisms. These sentiments are echoed in traditional Chinese medicine. In TCM, the time we enter sleep is the time when the body directs itself to rebalancing. This is the process of ingesting, digesting, cleansing, extracting, dispersing. This occurs between 9 and 11 p.m. In each subsequent 2-hour period, the body deals with different physical and mental processes. 7 psychological elements of sleep. I interpret the following stages of sleep from traditional Chinese medicine, ideas that lie outside Western medicine. We'll build a personal understanding of these resources and return to them in the psychology of sleep. 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Energy, balance, and consideration. 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Sense of self, vulnerable to self-empowered. 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. Reaction, anger to forgiveness. 3 a.m. to 5 a.m. Change, grief to gratitude. 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. Obstacles and opportunities, releasing, cleansing, and letting go. 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Responsibility, judgment to acceptance, lightheartedness. 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Connection. Jealousy to generosity. We often mistake knowing the definition of something for knowing the thing itself. We think we know what self-esteem, forgiveness, and gratitude mean because we can define them. But without deep feeling, our definitions are inadequate. Such definitions are relative. They represent nothing real. Much of the time, we have little idea of what we're talking about. Somnolence, a strong desire for sleep. In sleep, you shed the illusion of who you are. Your mind and body are united. Your lion lays down with the lamb. Your ego lays down with the stars. Dreams are one vehicle of growing awareness, and we'll talk about them later, but simple openness is the first step. Somnolence is putting on the talk to me sign, not addressed to the world so much as yourself. It should say, listen to me, or just, I'm listening. And you can see how ambiguous it is, how small-minded our language is, that it lacks a simple expression for knowing or not knowing who you are.